Life programming, the Hezbollah Secretary General Said Hassan Nasrallah is making a speech. Let's take a listen to what he's being said.
There are many points. The first point, as was said before, I want to say, also as someone who is responsible, the government of Prime Minister Miqati, which has been formed, this is a Lebanese creation, 100%. It is a Lebanese government, 100%. There was no foreign outside intervention which assisted in forming this government. Yes, there were some foreign obstructions, some outside pressures to prevent the government from being formed. However, the government has been formed because of an internal will, and this is the first time, or one of the rarest times, I believe, whereby we can say this government is a government made in Lebanon, 100%. The delay which occurred in the formation of the government for months was due to certain complications inside Lebanon. When these complications were addressed, the government was formed. And one of the other reasons behind the delay in formation of government was the foreign pressures, which anyone who has a will can overcome if the wills unite and come together. When it comes to Syria, because some parties, when a government is informed, they say Syria is preventing the formation of a government or Iran is preventing the formation. They accuse Syria or Iran. Accusing outside powers of obstruction or delay, of course, this also concerns us. And when the government is formed, they say these countries have made the decision to form the government. Now, these people who speak in this way, they are behaving according to hatred. Their behavior is based upon hatred, not reality or political analysis. These are false accusations. And from the beginning, I believe that our brothers in Syria, they had an interest in forming the government in Lebanon from day one. And this is a Lebanese interest, a Lebanese national interest, before it is a Syrian or Arab interest. They didn't go ahead to disrupt the formation. They didn't try and delay the formation of government. They didn't intervene. They didn't have any conditions. And the Syrians were very happy that this government was formed. And the same goes for our brothers in Iran. And the government was formed, thank God. And here also we can see a new failure, the failure of the March 14 and what they rely on. As we said in a previous speech, we said that they made a mistake here, there, they made these mistakes, and the March 14 continue to make mistakes and continue to make that, to rely on something, on mistakes. They relied and they said that the new majority wouldn't be able to form a government, and they promised the people months, that months would pass and that this new majority won't be able to form a government and Najib Miqati won't be able to form a government, and in the end Miqati will apologize and their friend will come back. This is what the March 14 was saying. The second point regarding the issue of the Lebanese government is that the continued talk of the March 14, this talk which is being sent to outside, to foreign parties as well, and the foreigners are using the same language. Sometime they say that this government is a Hezbollah government, then they say this government is a government of a Syrian regime, the government of President Bashar Assad, etc., etc. Let's speak first of all about Hezbollah. From our perspective, I would like to tell them that this does not cause harm to us. Do you think this causes harm to us? No. This is something we are proud of. For this government, with all of its men, with all of its real representation of the different political factions, which creates a balance, all the movements, all the main political movements in the country, which really reflect a majority. If they name it the government of Hezbollah, this is something we are not sad about. This is something we are proud about. However, the truth is not that. The truth is not the government of Hezbollah. We sometimes say the truth which you know, and sometimes we say no. If you say this is the government of Hezbollah, this means that we're harming Hezbollah. No, this does not harm us. We're not sad about this. But on the contrary, by saying this is the Hezbollah government, you always speak about the military strength. This means you're giving us more political strength when you say this is Hezbollah's government, when you make the people, when you portray the situation and say that who is ruling Lebanon and governing Lebanon and controlling the state is Hezbollah. This is you're magnifying the issue. We're not harmed, but this is not the truth. But if we want to speak about the truth, we find that no, this is a government. Let's describe the government appropriately. Hezbollah has two ministers in this government, one with a portfolio and another state minister. The other ministers are all friends, and we respect them all and we cooperate with them. This is not the government of one color, of one faction. This is a government of a national coalition, which is made up of different political movements, of different factions. I don't want to speak about the specific numbers, of course. We are very keen on working together as one team with all our different factions and all our different affiliations. I also want to draw your attention to the fact that this government must not be divided into one specific majority and another specific majority in two different groups. We in the current government, we are one team. We agree on the general lines, on the general political lines, social lines, economic lines and security lines, which will be reflected by the cabinet policy statement. And in detail, of course, each side has its own perspective and they have differences amongst one another, those who are in the government, and in other subjects they might agree. So they might agree and disagree in details. This is the truth of the matter regarding the government. So to insist that this is a Hezbollah government, this is against the truth, this is against reality. But there are aims behind using such terms. First of all, one of the aims, one of the goals is to use this slogan, Hezbollah's government, to create provocations internally, to incite sectarian hatred, for example. Let's be very frank here. They said that Hezbollah, which is Shia, controls the government and controls the state. And so you of the other religious sects, where are you? So the aim of this slogan, the aim of this theme is to provoke the other religious sects, and this is part of sectarian incitement. And the other side has gotten used to this sectarian incitement, and it has lived by using this slogan, and it is depending on this program or this agenda. But this will fail, God willing. Also, regarding inciting what the so-called international community or the outside countries. The outside countries, America, the West, are some Arab countries. Now, regarding inciting inside, this won't bring about any results. Everybody knows the government, everybody knows who has ministers, everybody knows who listens to who, and the issue is not as some people are trying to portray, as some people are trying to show. This is not the government of one party or one faction. It's nothing like this whatsoever. And if it was, this government would have been formed in a few days and in a few hours it would have drafted this manifesto, its policy statement, and gained the vote of confidence in 1 week, if the case was as such. Now, when it comes to inciting the international world, outside countries, I'd like to tell the March 14, you are mistaken. You make a mistake when you incite the world against Lebanon by saying this is a Hezbollah government. You are harming Lebanon. You are harming the people of Lebanon, the economy of Lebanon. You're not harming Hezbollah as a specific party. Now, we're going into we're on the doors of the summer. We have a tourism season coming up. You always spoke to us about the tourism season and that the political tension and how this harms the tourism season. But why don't you calm down your rhetoric for the tourism season? Because in this way, you'll give the government a chance and you'll also give the country time to breathe. I'd like to tell you, inciting the outside powers against Lebanon, this harms Lebanon. It does not harm specific parties, because you know that Hezbollah doesn't have any economic interests outside, nor do we have any money outside, nor do we have any assets outside. And also in Lebanon, we don't have any banks. There is no bank for us, and we are not partners with any bank, not just for financial reasons, also for certain religious reasons as well. And we don't have any money in the banks, and even here in Lebanon, we don't have any investment projects. And here, in between brackets, this might be a chance for me to tell all the people that Hezbollah doesn't have any investment projects in Lebanon or outside Lebanon. There might be people who are rich, who are very close to us, who are our friends, who are businessmen, who go ahead with projects as any other businessman does. However, if anybody tells you that this is a Hezbollah project, this is not true. This is unrealistic. This is a lie. We are not involved in such projects. And anyway, when you incite the outside world to take measures against Lebanon, this outside world will put pressure on the banks, on the economy in Lebanon, on the assistance, on the state, on the people, on the country. But this specific party, this resistance specifically, it might be the least affected by any measures. So by inciting the outside world, you're not going ahead with a political process or constructive opposition, because the means you want to use are not honorable and illegitimate. Anywhere in the world, when a government is formed, this government is given a chance. The government of Saad Hariri, we called for giving it a chance of 1 year. And 1 week has passed, and you're not even ready to give one week chance for Najib Mikati. Give him 6 months, 1 year, 3 months. But even before his government was formed, you began with your attack on this government. This is no problem. That's your right. It's your right to practice opposition in parliament and to practice opposition on the streets and wherever you want. However, I always advise, as we advised ourselves and as we advised our allies, we must not resort to sectarian incitement, because this will be a double-edged knife. And also know very well that depending on the outside, on the foreign countries, will fail as it failed before. You always relied on the outside countries, on the outside world. You relied on the American attack on the region, and you called for this attack to continue on the whole region and to reach Damascus. You also relied on the Israeli war on Lebanon in July 2006, and you continue to rely on the international developments and the regional developments. And now, in your corridors and in your statements and in your newspapers, in your political statements, all your talk is because of your incapability. You're speaking about the collapse of the regime in Syria. You're always focusing on the outside. You're always depending on outside plots, whether they be positive or negative. And I'd like to tell you, depending on these plots will fail, as they failed before. Now, of course, number three regarding the government is the cabinet policy statement. I don't think there will be a problem regarding the cabinet policy statement. Of course, they have been discussing this cabinet policy statement, I believe, for about 1 week. Usually this process takes time. And because of the mutual trust between the components of this government and with the Prime Minister Mikati and a positive dialogue, I don't believe there will be a problem. And God willing, this cabinet policy statement will be drafted and the cabinet will get the confidence and it will overcome all of the obstacles. All of the obstacles will disappear. And the last point regarding the government, they're waiting, for example, for the indictment of the Hariri Tribunal. I'd like to tell you regarding this government, I'd like to tell you that the most important issue is working for the people. And so I call on all the components of this government to cooperate, to stand shoulder to shoulder, and to pursue the efforts in order to take advantage of the time to serve our country and to serve our people and to address the problems. And there are many things which we can achieve. And we must not be dragged into these arguments which they want to get us exhausted in day and night. We've always been exhausted in this. This is the first subject I wanted to speak about, and now I would like to end this first subject by saying, thank God, after this long waiting period, we have a government, and all of us cooperated to form this government. Of course, the last step, the unique step which was taken by Parliament Speaker Birri, was a very appreciated step on the national level and on the Shia level as well, and I believe it gave a chance, the complete chance, to form the government. And hence now we have a government in the country, and we will work very seriously and honestly with the president and with the prime minister and with all of the components of this government, so that we have a successful government and a beneficial government which serves the people in the country. Now I would like to speak about the second subject of tonight's speech. Of course, normally, as you know, the second subject is a bit sensitive and it might be somewhat unfamiliar. Usually, in the parties and in the countries, such issues are not addressed in the way which I will speak about, because we are very cautious when it comes to our honesty and our transparency, and we always base our talk based on respect for the feelings and for the general well-being of those who love the resistance and those who pin their hopes on the resistance here in whether they be here in Lebanon or in the Arab world or in the Islamic world or anywhere else. This respect for the feelings and the sympathy of our supporters imposes on us to give them the truth, to tell them the truth, and not leave them subject to rumors, to long rumors. Especially in light of the many, many lies which have been distributed time and again, especially regarding this latest matter. So I will speak about this as much as I can, but I will speak very clearly, and I think that I will speak to the extent where people will expect, according to people's expectations, I will uncover the truth regarding this matter. Last year, just to remind you, on more than one occasion, I said that we are immune to Israeli penetration and we have no Israeli spies in Hezbollah. Now, after what was said, many people in the media said, this is not true. If this is not true, let Hezbollah deny. If it is true, what will Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah say? If it is true, they are not upset. They want to see what the Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah will say. Of course, you can understand this in the way which you want. Now you will listen to what I have to say. I also said that we have a body in Hezbollah which combats, whose duty is to combat spying. And when a number of our colleagues in Hezbollah were accused of spying, three of our brothers, we held a long investigation and interrogation with them, and we became sure that these accusations were false. So what I'm going to speak about now is not related to these three brothers who were accused last year of being spies. These three people are innocent and they are still occupying their jobs, and we are sure of their innocence. If we did suspect them one little bit, we would have acted in a different way. Now, the new situation which we have today, which we are witnessing, is the following. So I will speak first of all about the realities, and then I will comment on these realities, on these facts. The Israelis were incapable of penetrating Hezbollah's infrastructure, of infiltrating Hezbollah's infrastructure, and I still insist on this meaning. But the Israelis resorted to the CIA, and we have in our possession now not agents or spies for Israel, as the media said. The media said they were spies for Israel, but this is not the case. Based upon the interrogation and the investigation, what we have in our hands are three cases, which I will speak about, two cases whereby they have relations with the CIA recruited them, and the third case is something which we are still looking at. Is this third case related to the CIA or European intelligence or the Mossad? So the Israelis, because they were incapable, they got the assistance of the strongest intelligence in the world to infiltrate Hezbollah's infrastructure. This is the way they must view the situation. Anyone who wants to make a security evaluation and analyze this, that's the way they should analyze. A few months ago, after the wing of Hezbollah's anti-spying body in Hezbollah monitored, we found out that there were two cases of people who were cooperating or in contact with two members of his CIA who were working undercover in the American embassy in Aukar. Now, one of the results of all this is that the American embassy here is a place for spying, and one of the American diplomats is an intelligence officer who is recruiting the Lebanese community, Lebanese society, and the Lebanese political factions. I'm speaking about two separate cases. This is not a spying ring where two work together, but two separate cases, one with one CIA officer, the other with another CIA officer. I won't mention now these two cases. We followed them through. I won't mention their names out of respect for their families, respect for their honorable families, and I know their families personally, and I will go back to this soon. However, I will just say, in order to of course take away the rumors about others, because what is being published, they're publishing names of many members of Hezbollah, and this is unjust to all of these people. I'd just like to tell you the initials of these people in order to take away the rumors from others whose names have been also circulated. The first case, we can call it AB. This person was recruited very recently, and we will evaluate this from a security perspective. 5 months ago he was recruited. The CIA officer came and he recruited this person, and after Hezbollah followed this through, he was uncovered and he confessed to his relationship with the CIA during the interrogation. The second case is M.H. M.H. was recruited also by the CIA, however, he was recruited before that time, the time of the other, and he also confessed to his ties with the CIA. We have a third case, M.A. And we are also sure, we have certified that he is related to a certain foreign body, and he confessed that he's related to a foreign intelligence body, but we are still looking into who actually he was in contact with, the CIA or a European intelligence agency or an Israeli intelligence agency. We're still looking into that. Based on what was given, we have three cases. These three cases, they confessed after the interrogations, they confessed, and unfortunately they fell into this trap. They failed the test, and we must deny or certify certain issues after all the rumors which were circulated. First of all, the number of spies is three. If it were more than three, I would have told you. We have the courage to say how many spies in Hezbollah there are in Hezbollah. No party would talk in this way. Other parties, when they uncover spies, they say, let's not embarrass themselves, and they address this situation. As you probably know, they might kill them, they might make funerals for them, martyrdom funerals, or pick posters for them, but because we behave in an ethical way, in a jihadist way, because we have a responsibility towards our individuals and our families, we act in a different way. And so, in such issues and in other issues, be sure that we have the courage to tell the truth and to confront the truth, even if this is a bitter truth. So the number of spies is three. It is not five, nor is it more than the fingers on our two hands, as some newspapers said. Some media outlets, Arab media outlets, even spoke about 100 cases of spies. Thank you very much. In addition, in these three cases, none of these people is a member of Hezbollah's leadership, a high-ranking Hezbollah member. There is no religious figure amongst these three cases as well, contrary to the rumors which were circulated. Maybe some people might have been confused because there was a certain religious figure who was arrested by the Lebanese army, and they all know that this religious figure has nothing to do with Hezbollah. He announces his enmity to Hezbollah, and every day he releases statements against Hezbollah and Iran and Syria. Number four, amongst these three cases, there is nobody who is close to the Secretary General, to myself, from the security perspective, nor from the practical angle, because some people attempted to speak about police stories regarding this. Number five, none of them has a relationship to the battlefield, nor to the sensitive military units, such as the unit of launching rockets, which the Americans and the Israelis are trying to gain information about, because this is usually, Hezbollah usually maintains the secrecy of this. It's usually silent regarding this. Number six, in order to reassure our supporters and those who love us, none of these three cases, these three people, has sensitive information which could harm the infrastructure or the structure in general of the resistance. Because of the way we deal with these issues internally and because of their stand, because of their levels, they do not, none of them occupy a senior post whereby their information could harm Hezbollah's military structure and could harm Hezbollah's ability to in any future military confrontation. Number seven, none of these three people has anything to do with the assassination of Imad Mughniyeh, the former Hezbollah top military commander, because some newspapers publish this. Number eight, none of these three cases has anything to do with the special tribunal, because some people in their police stories, they said that these three people, now Hezbollah uncovered them so that in the future they would find an exit to the Hariri tribunal. But we've ended this Hariri tribunal. We put it aside a long time ago, and these three people, they were not mentioned in Dursh Begul, nor in all of the scandals about the tribunal, nor in the Canadian television, nor amongst the names which were distributed by the Lebanese security circles, nor were these names mentioned by the investigative committee into the Hariri assassination. These three names had nothing to do with the Hariri assassination, and none of their names was mentioned in this whole file. So we cannot say that this issue of these three spies has anything to do with the tribunal or finding an exit to this issue of a tribunal. We have, as I said, we have put this issue of a tribunal aside, and we have nothing to do with any scenario regarding the tribunal. Now, regarding the security evaluation, from a security perspective, first of all, it's very clear that the Israelis are still incapable. This Israeli incapability still continues. And this is why the Israelis resorted to the strongest intelligence in the world. And this has its reasons, because the Israeli security services were subject to severe blows over the past 3 years here in Lebanon, and they were confused, and they didn't have the sufficient number of eyes and ears and numbers, and so they resorted to the CIA. There is a big difference. The CIA officer is protected. He's an American diplomat, and nobody can harm him in Lebanon. Number two, America is a friendly country, as some say, and they are protected in the embassy, and they drive around in embassy vehicles. They go to restaurants. They go into houses. And so the CIA is a different situation. It's different than any Israeli officer or any Israeli intelligence official. And so for this reason, the Israelis resorted to the CIA, which enjoys great human resources and technical and security resources as well. They resorted to the CIA. If they had not, the information which the CIA requested from these three people doesn't concern the American administration. These are the information they requested were military security details which concern Israel in case of any future military confrontation or any security penetration or any attempt to harm any member of the resistance. The second point is that the CIA in Lebanon is at the service of the Israeli security services. The CIA in Lebanon gathers information for Israel. It does not gather information for the American administration. Number three, it's true, these CIA officers, they were able to recruit people. However, what is more important is that the security wing in Hezbollah was able to uncover these three people, despite all the precautionary measures which were taken, because the CIA considers itself, when it comes to recruitment and preserving the spies, it considers it self to be at the highest level in its behavior and how it deals with its spies. So to uncover these cases, and some of these cases were uncovered very quickly. The history of the recruitment is 5 months, no more, no less. And maybe it's one of the first times whereby a CIA the CIA witnesses such a failure in confronting a party or an organization or a popular side, because here we're not speaking about a country or certain government institutions. We're speaking about a party, Hezbollah. So what we are witnessing here is an achievement. a real security achievement for the resistance. And this security achievement increases our confidence and our conviction that we can confront any security violations, even if these violations come from the strongest intelligence agency in the world. Also, this also focuses the light on the spying activities in Qatar, where the American embassy is located. We have been assured now that the American embassy in Qatar in Beirut is a center for spying and recruitment for the sake of Israel. And so on the national level, on the official level, on the popular level, how do we deal with such a spying center which is going ahead with these activities? In this file, I have one more thing I would like to say to the people, especially to our supporters. First of all, I call on our supporters to deal in a brotherly way and in a merciful way with the families of those three cases who were accused, because these families are honorable families. The mother, father, the wife, the children, the relatives, they are guilty of nothing. They are hurt even more than we are hurt. This is a moral loss for them. And I know these families, and if any one of their children would have been martyred, they would have been proud. Of course, for them, this is a real catastrophe, according to their culture, their mindset, their affiliation. And so we must deal with these families in a brotherly and merciful way. Another thing, I call not to speak about these names in a blind way, not to throw names here and there. We must beware of God. Of course, on judgment day, we will stand in the hands of God, and God will say, you spread rumors about him, about this person, you accuse this person. And these are things which we will be accused of and questioned about on judgment day. And so we must be very careful when we speak about the names, especially when the names of the mujahideen and resistance fighters are mentioned. Another issue is we must not fall into the trap of psychological warfare, which aims, our enemies aim to strike the morale of resistance and the resistance fighters and the supporters of resistance. So we must not fall into this trap of psychological warfare. We must be very, very precise and careful, and we must know that we have entered into a new period. We believed that we are confronting the Israelis in the security perspective, and that the American intelligence is looking for another kind of information. So we focus on the Israeli intelligence activities. But of course, we didn't turn a blind eye to the American intelligence. But when we become a direct goal of the American intelligence in this way, this means without any doubt that we have entered into a new period of a security warfare, intelligence confrontation. And so our members, our leaders, our supporters must be very careful, must be urgent, must be vigilant, and we must not take anything lightly. Some things which might appear innocent, we must not take them lightly. This level of caution in our society towards the Israelis, this might not be there when it comes to the curtains behind which the American intelligence people move and behave. And so we must put ourselves in the following perspective, that the resistance in Lebanon is targeted by American intelligence and Western intelligence and Arab intelligence, in addition to the fact that it's targeted by Israeli intelligence. And preserving and maintaining this resistance and protecting it and strengthening this resistance is the responsibility of all of us, because it's all of our strength. It's the strength for all of us, as I will refer to when it comes to the Israeli maneuvers very soon. I'd like to tell you, with all determination, we must take advantage of this confrontation, and we exited this confrontation victorious, because here we were wounded, but we were able to seal this wound and uncover these three cases, and we were able to overcome this danger. We will strengthen our immunity more than before. We will overthrow any intelligence efforts, American or other than American, and our resistance and your resistance, God willing, will always be strong, solid, and able to bring about victory in all arenas, and in confronting all the challenges and threats. The other subject I want to speak about are the Israeli maneuvers, turning point five. I was very quick so that I could take advantage of the time to speak about all the four subjects which I want to speak about. The turning point five Israeli maneuvers for the fifth consecutive year after the July 2006 war. The Israeli entity, the Israeli enemy, is holding maneuvers for the home front. They hold these maneuvers every year. They called it turning point maneuvers. And they really are a turning point in the security mentality, the fighting mentality, the strategy. It's a real turning point, a big turning point. It's a historic strategic structural turning point for the Israeli entity, for the Israeli enemy. Turning point one, turning point two. These days, of course, we witnessed a turning point five. Turning point five included all of the Israeli entity, all of occupied Palestine, and these maneuvers, turning point five, included the inhabitants, the cities, the municipalities, the settlements, the public areas, the infrastructure, the airports, electricity, water, communication networks, factories, companies, important strategic locations and strategic points, in addition to military locations, military bases, logistical bases, and also the political institutions, the headquarters of the government and the Knesset and other headquarters. These maneuvers were bigger than all the other previous maneuvers, whether it be in the nature or in the magnitude. Of course, I don't have the time to evaluate the turning point five maneuvers, whether they were successful or they failed, but I want to focus regarding this matter. I want to focus on some important points in brief. First of all, I'd like to remind you that turning point 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and all of the maneuvers which are being held by the enemy from the security perspective, militarily, the home front, all of these maneuvers are the result of Israel's defeat and the victory of the resistance in the July 2006 war. Because before July 2006, throughout the history of the Israeli entity, we didn't witness such maneuvers for the home front, such big maneuvers, and we didn't see these numbers, these very many numbers of Israeli maneuvers. So this is all a result of the Israeli defeat and an Israeli confession to defeat in the July 2006 war. The second point, which is very significant, turning point five, if we add it to all the other turning point maneuvers before, this as an Israeli recognition and an Israeli confession. Here we have to speak about the security doctrine, something which is strategic. The Israelis now confess that the Israeli home front will be part of any future war. Before July 2006, this wasn't the case. After that, we also saw the war on Gaza. Every time the Israelis spoke about war in the territory of others, they send their troops, they send their army, their air force to fight in the territories of others. But their home front will always be protected. That was the assumption before, protected in many different ways. However, today, the Israelis have confessed that in any future war, whether it be a war against Lebanon or Gaza or Syria or Iran or with all these parties or with some of them, in any future war, the home front, the Israeli home front, will be part of the battle. And this is a structural turning point and a strategic turning point in the security doctrine, in the military doctrine, the Israeli military doctrine. And what is most important of all, why do I say always preserve the resistance? This also makes the Israelis think 1,000 times before they take the decision to go to war. Before 2006, the Israelis said, okay, we can wage a war. What will be the end? They invade, they occupy, they bomb, and their home front is protected. They weren't concerned about where their millions will go, how will they provide bomb shelters for them, whether they hide their military headquarters, their military bases, their airports, their government, their Knesset. They never thought about this, their strategic points, their sensitive points. They never worried about this before. this never occurred to them before when the Israelis decided to wage a new war. However, this has changed. Today, this has changed. This has become a very important part of taking a decision to go to war. And so this creates deterrence. Number three, the Israelis also have confessed here that all of them, the human resources, geographically, economically, militarily, everything is threatened, number one. And number two, they cannot protect them. They cannot protect them. The rockets will fall down. The rockets will reach their targets. The operations will go ahead. The confrontations on the territory of the enemy could occur. And so the Israelis realize very well that they have lost the ability to protect the home front militarily. And for this reason, they are forced to go ahead and make a ministry for the home front. This is the first time a ministry specialized with protecting the home front. And this ministry draws up plans and scenarios for how do people go down to the shelter, how do we preserve communications, if the communications are cut off, how can we provide alternatives to the harbors, to the airports, how do they provide alternatives to the headquarters of the government of the Knesset, for the Israeli military command, how do they provide alternatives, for example, for the air force bases, for the airports of the military planes. And so the Israelis are confessing that they cannot protect their home front, and so they are forced to draw up plans and scenarios to confront the so-called threat of the home front. Number four, regarding turning point five, the Israelis are confessing that they cannot reach a decisive result in any war, a quick decisive result. This is also a big strategic change in the Israeli military doctrine. Before, part of the Israeli doctrine was that they quickly decide the war. They reach decisive results very quickly. Decisive, quick battles, which last a few days, weeks at the best. Now the Israelis are confessing that they cannot reach decisive results in any future battle very quickly. And so when they hold maneuvers on the home front, they hence speak about measures and scenarios to protect the Israeli home front for a war which could continue for months. And imagine the situation of the Israeli entity and the people of this entity who came to the territories of occupied Palestine, who were promised with the good life. How could they put up with a war for months whereby rockets will land, or rockets could land, on every point in occupied Palestine? Number five, these maneuvers of turning point five, they have specified the following. And this will be an introduction for me to speak about the last subject, the Arab situation. This has specified who Israel considers as an enemy or as a threat in the region and in the Arab world and the Islamic world. Who does Israel specify as its real threat, its enemy? There are some enemies in newspapers, on the internet, in statements. They say Israel is the enemy. However, Israel doesn't take any consideration for their presence, nor for their armies, nor for their warplanes, nor for their rockets, nor for their military and human capabilities. Israel doesn't focus any attention on these people. Arab countries, Islamic countries, countries in the world, they are outside any Israeli calculations. The Israelis, when they hold these maneuvers, turning point five, these comprehensive maneuvers on all fronts, Israel is saying frankly, we have four fronts. They believe these four fronts are the threat. These four fronts are Iran, Syria, the resistance in Lebanon, and the resistance in Gaza. Maybe, of course, they are sure about the West Bank, that this is not a threat, there's no threat from there. So when the Israelis, the enemy of the Ummah, of the nation, the enemy of 1 billion, 4 million Muslims, the enemy of the people of the region, Muslims and Christians, Israel, which has stolen the sanctity of the Muslims and Christians, and who acts as if all of this region is no enemy and doesn't represent a threat. I'm speaking on the level here of the governments and the regimes and the armies. Israel here believes that there are four fronts which represent a threat, and so they must hold maneuvers and prepare militarily and internally to confront these threats. This is something which we must focus on. We must shed light on this. And I will use this as an introduction to speak about the Arab situation. I'd like to conclude, however, when it comes to turning point five, and say the following. These maneuvers show Israel, or portray Israel, as if its aim is to defend and to protect, and that its people are under a threat. This is partly true to some extent, because there are serious forces in the region. There is a serious confrontation. There is a serious resistance. This is not an act, nor is it a scenario, nor is it a speech. However, there is a battlefield and an equation of deterrence and confrontation where achievements have been made. However, what we must turn a blind eye to for one moment, we must always focus on the fact that Israel is always planning to wage wars in the region. Historically, Israel always begun with the wars. Israel always initiated the wars. And so, most of the wars were initiated by Israel. And so, the Israelis, when they reach the point whereby they need to change the equation in the region, or whereby they need to impose conditions in the region, they might launch a war. And they must be ready in their home front. So, we must not say to ourselves that these maneuvers, their aim is defense, and that Israel is worried and Israel is afraid. This is true, yes. However, on the other hand, Israel also has a project to practice hegemony in the region. Israel has a hostile nature. Israel has an offensive nature. And when Israel prepares itself on its home front to this level, our eyes and our ears and our minds and all of us, we must all be vigilant and careful, because this is the nature of Israel ever since this entity was established. And here I'd like to speak about the Arab situation. I'd like to say the following. Israel is going ahead with these activities. Five big maneuvers under the title Turning Point. Big military maneuvers, new military equipment, new military airplanes, new capabilities. What is our Arab and Islamic world? What are they doing? Now, many of our people are sympathetic and express their solidarity, and they might feel sometimes they do not have anything else but to express their sympathy. However, what is going on sometimes, what goes on sometimes in our Arab and Islamic world is negative, is bad. We're not speaking about, we shouldn't speak always about positive, sometimes we speak about negative. The Israelis confess that there is strength in this region, in this Ummah. The resistance movement in Gaza, in the Arab world, some people are practicing conspiracies against this resistance in Gaza. Governments, regimes, certain parties, some are conspiring against them, isolating them financially, politically, tarnishing their image in the media via their media outlets, by their Arab satellite stations. Some who are also looking for any gap, anything bad, to magnify and exaggerate, to strike the morale of the resistance and our people in Gaza, instead of looking at Gaza as one of the basis of the Ummah, one of the strengths of the Ummah, one of the places of dignity of this Ummah, and provide assistance to it. In addition, when it comes to resistance movement in Lebanon, what happened before and what is happening to this resistance in Lebanon is very well known, and I don't have to speak about it in detail, especially because hundreds of millions of dollars are being spent to tarnish the image of this resistance. They believe that they are incapable of striking this resistance militarily inside Lebanon and on the level of the region. However, they are trying to strike its image, trying to strike its capability and its credibility as well. So for this reason, we find all of these lies and rumors which are being circulated to target the credibility of the resistance, and millions of dollars are spent those who spend this money confess that millions of dollars are spent for this reason. Iran, I'll leave Syria for the last subject, the last issue. Iran, which represents for the Israeli enemy a real subject of anxiety, something which they believe is an existential threat. But some in the Arab and Islamic world are trying to portray Iran as a devil, trying to show it as an enemy of the Arabs and the Muslims. For what? To serve Israel, to preserve its existence, to defend Israel's interests. Now, when it comes to Syria, and when I say what is always said in Hezbollah, this is based on a vision, it's based on a conviction, it's based on clarity. It's the right of others to criticize our position and our vision, and it's our right to disagree with them, and it's our duty to advise them as well. And even, especially when it comes to our Muslim friends, in the region, we have one resistance regime, which is the Syrian regime. This is the only resistance regime. It is probably the only resistance regime on the level of the Arab world. There are other regimes who have good official stances, but first of all, they are far away, and second of all, they are always facing the conspiracies of division and international pressures. However, in the region, there is one regime, which is a resistance regime. Ever since the beginning until now, this regime, because of its alliances, via its alliance with the Islamic Republic of Iran, and because of its alliances with the resistance movements in Lebanon, in Palestine, in Iraq, and because of this Syrian regime's agreement with the mood of the Ummah, this Syrian regime was able to overthrow the most dangerous American-Israeli projects, which targeted and still do target destroying the Palestinian cause and taking complete control of our country and our resources and our Ummah. This is the truth. And we don't want to speak in detail here what is the role of this regime in this battle and in this equation. And then the leader of this regime comes out, Bashar al-Assad comes out and says, I'm ready to go ahead with reforms. He begins to take the step of reforms. He lays out a framework for the reforms, like the law of the parties, the law for the media, etc., etc. And he grants two general amnesties, amnesty even against people who took up arms and committed certain crimes. Look at Bahrain, for example, on the other hand. People went out to participate in peaceful protests. Hundreds were martyred, hundreds were wounded, and hundreds were arrested, and they didn't use firearms, nor did they use pistols, nor did they use grenades, nor did they go ahead and form force, nor did they go ahead and occupy villages. They didn't even use knives, the Bahraini protesters. But regardless, they were thrown into prison, and the leaders of the Bahraini peaceful opposition, they are being tried. The government calls for a dialogue, and the second day after calling for dialogue, it then sentenced them to life imprisonment, leaders of the Bahraini opposition. This is completely unjust. In Syria, he grants general amnesty and calls for dialogue and takes real steps towards reforms. But regardless of this, they don't accept it from him. I'd like to tell you, whatever President Assad does, whatever our brothers in Syria do, nothing of this will be accepted internationally, nor even on the level of some Arabs, nor even on the level of some of the so-called Syrian opposition parties. Some in the Syrian opposition might accept. However, there are some who won't accept whatever be the steps which will be taken by the Syrian leadership. So, in light of the new steps, in light of the latest speech by President Assad, in light of the latest popular movements in Syria, and to comment also on the criticism which was made against us by some sides who said that Hezbollah's position regarding Syria, who criticized this position, but I'd like to tell them this is our position. We based our position on a strategy. Our position is based on a strategy. We believe that cooperating or collaborating or trying to work to overthrow this regime of resistance, this regime who is ready for reforms, this is a service to Israel. This is also a service to America, and this is a service to American and Israeli hegemony over our region, very clearly. And when we believe in something, we say it very frankly. with courage, with boldness. And so I'd like to repeat the call once again. I call on the Syrian people, the nationalistic Syrian people, the resistance people, the honorable people, the honest Syrian people. I call on them to read what is going on in the region and to realize the magnitude of the targeting of Syria, the magnitude of the plot which is targeting Syria as a country, as a regime, as an army, and then to act accordingly. Now, when it comes to Bahrain and the injustice in Bahrain, unfortunately, we believe that the horizon is shut close. It's closed in Bahrain because the government is sentencing people to life imprisonment. It's killing people daily. Those who are peacefully protesting, they're killing them daily, despite the fact that they're not resorting to violence. And this is going ahead, this is going on with international silence. However, anyway, this cannot continue in this way in Bahrain. Any people, any leadership, any side, when they are honest and when they believe in what they're doing and when they are serious in their movement, in their peaceful movement or in their reformist movement, the consequences will not be bad. The results will not be bad, God willing. I believe this is enough. The hour has finished. I wanted to speak about all of these issues and raise all these points to say where we have reached, the stage we have reached in Lebanon, the stage which we have reached in the region, especially when it comes to turning point five. I call on the strategic military experts, the security experts, the politicians to evaluate these maneuvers and to speak and explain their significance on many different occasions. When it comes to the government, God willing, we will work seriously for this government to be beneficial, efficient, and in cohesion, in agreement. And when it comes to the security perspective, the spies who were uncovered, be assured that it's not as dangerous as things seem to you, as they were told about, as some people tried to show. Hezbollah sacrificed, Hezbollah has given to you victories, and God willing, Hezbollah will always give to you and its nation and its families and its people more victories. And assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Behrud, you were just listening to Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah, in which he was talking about different events regarding not only Lebanon, but also of the region. Quickly, I'm going to give you some highlights. He talked about the government of the Lebanese Prime Minister Najib Miqati, and he said this is a Lebanese creation. It's 100% Lebanese, and this is one of the rarest times in Lebanon's history that this government, which is 100% Lebanese, has been formed. He talked about the delays, and he said, well, there were some complications both within Lebanon and also from foreign interference in it, but obviously that has been overcome. He talked about a new failure, the failure of the March 14th movement, in which he said that they're still going to exercise whatever influence they can, but at this point they have actually... And before I continue, let's look at the breaking news coming there. Some Saudi protesters have come out on the streets in Qatif, in which they have slammed the intervention of the situation in the Persian Gulf island of Bahrain. Continuing with the highlights of the speech of Hezbollah's Secretary General, he talked about the Western media in terms of the formation of the Lebanese government, saying this is a Syrian government, this is influenced by Hezbollah, in which he said this actually gives Hezbollah more political strength. This is a government, he indicated, that is made up of different factions, but it's a united faction, it's a united government, and they are all on one page. Plots against Syria, he said, are going to fail. He also said that in Syria, the president has given a speech on a few occasions. He has introduced reforms. But no matter what he's going to do, it seems like the outside interference is still prevailing. He said that it doesn't seem like the international arena is accepting that. And again, this is in a general sense that I'm giving you these highlights. He talked about a number of spies that was reported in the media to have been infiltrated the security apparatus of Hezbollah. He said those are false. There were only three in which Hezbollah's intelligence was able to capture, because based on some of the reports in Israel, they had said that, to quote you, several Hezbollah members, including senior group figures were detained. Well, that's not that was rejected by the Hezbollah Secretary General. And regarding Bahrain, well, he has said that that is just unjust, the sentences of life that were given to some of the opposition members who had exercised the right of freedom of expression by going out on the streets. And he said that the people in Bahrain are exercising not only that right, but they're doing it in a nonviolent way, but still the suppression continues there by the Saudi-backed forces. Just a few of the highlights, and I'm going to leave it at that. Stay tuned. Press TV News Analysis with Homa Leski is going to be up next, talking about the latest developments on the politics of Afghanistan.